The Click and Go Travel Podcast, fueling your wanderlust with far-flung, off-the-beaten-track destinations to just across the water and everything in between.
Welcome back to the Click and Go Holidays Travel Podcast. In studio with Paul and I today are Joe, who is the director of the travel industry and sales for Miami, and Dan, who is the director of the LGBT marketing. They're both from the Miami Tourist Board, and we're going to be talking about all things Miami. Hiya, you're very welcome.
Hi there.
Oh, great to be here.
Thank you, Jill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for inviting us up.
Yeah, thanks very much for joining us, and we're very excited to hear all about Miami. And maybe just to start off, in terms of arriving to Miami, what is the airport like? How is it? Is it easy to get in and out to downtown? How would people get there?
Yeah, so our airport is right in the heart of the destination, really. So, for instance, to get to downtown, you're 15, 20 minutes away.
Okay.
And over to the beach, that's maybe 25, 30 minutes. And it's all highway. It's all really direct roads heading out of the airport to downtown as well as the beach. And points further north are maybe, depending on what part of the county you're going to, is that much more. The distances are not very great. It's just, unfortunately, the traffic sometimes makes it seem like it is, but it's really not.
I know we're used to traffic here.
Yeah.
No, but it is. Yeah. Like, Jill, I've flown in quite a few times into Miami, and it is quick. It is speedy. It's a centrally located airport, and it's easy to get into the downtown area and over to the beaches.
And how would you get into the downtown area, like in terms of public transport or?
Well, if you wanted to do the public transport, that's how I sort of try to navigate as often as possible. There's an Orange Line connection. It's part of the Metrorail system that takes you right into downtown. So if you're staying in that area, yeah, it's perfect. You can then connect to the Metro Mover, which is the free rail that goes around the downtown and Brickell area. Then if you wanted to continue on public transportation, there's always the 110 bus that takes you into Miami Beach from downtown. So that's sort of how I try to navigate when I go to a destination, to connect with the people.
Yeah.
So I invite others to do the same. But of course, there's also Uber and taxis if you want to get around right at the airport.
Super.
So easy to get.
So we've got to the airport.
Yeah.
And we can now get in. We can use public transport. We can use Uber. We're there.
Great. And if someone was planning their first trip to Miami, what would be the top things to do and see that you think should absolutely be on their list or on their itinerary?
Wow, where do we start? Because there's the perception of Miami, which continues to this day, is that it's just the beaches and nightlife, and that's about it. But there's really a lot to do. I mean, you can explore South Beach, you can go to the Art Deco District, you go visit Wynwood, which is, it's really right now our trendiest neighborhood, you would say, if you agree with me, Dan, on that. That's where you're going to find the largest concentration of urban artwork, the murals. You're going to find the largest concentration of microbreweries, a lot of restaurants, just a lot of activities always going on in the Wynwood area. Little Havana, of course, if you want to enjoy the Latin culture, but especially the Cuban culture, you can certainly visit Little Havana. If you like the natural side, you can go visit the Everglades, which is one of our two national parks, to enjoy the flora, the fauna. And if you go in the winter months, which is the best time to see gators, the American gators, it's really quite nice to go during that time of the year. Downtown Brickell area also. Museums you can visit. The culinary scene is quite extensive in Miami, so you can eat your way through the destination. And go spend an evening down in Coconut Grove, which is our oldest city within Miami-Dade County. So if you were going to be there for about 3 days, day one, you can do South Beach, Art Deco, and then sunset on Ocean Drive. Day two, go Little Havana, Wynwood, and evening in Brickell. And then on day three, go to the Everglades for an excursion, visit Vizcaya, which is an incredible museum and garden, and then Biscayne Bay sunset cruise.
You know, it is gorgeous because I think you have the perfect combination of everything. You have an urban city with all that an urban city brings in terms of museums and culture and population and people who live there.
Yeah.
And you have the beaches, you have the waterways, you have the islands, you have everybody cruising out of Miami. You have all of the fun stuff to do. And whether it's daytime or nighttime, it's just brilliant. And as Joe was saying, the food setup is just incredible. Like, you have such choice. You have such a melting pot of people living in that area.
Yeah.
It really is. It's an absolutely, it's quite unique, I think, in US cities, in terms of sometimes you can visit a city in the States and it almost looks like where you left. Whereas you don't get that perception or impression in Miami. It really
is completely different.
Yeah, gateway to everything. Yeah, really, really cool.
And even though we're a relatively new city, I mean, there is a history there, you know, like how we came on the map, how we became recognized by the world was the Art Deco District, right?
Yeah.
The colors from the Art Deco District. So how did that come about? You know, the fight for that, it actually was a struggle to actually keep them there.
Okay.
So that's always a really nice history to dive into, how the town was literally colored because it was they were all white buildings, all white and cream buildings. And actually a palette was selected by the Miami Design Preservation League.
Wow.
And all the buildings were painted.
Wow.
And that's what put us on the map. So I think that that's a really great place to start for your first time experience, you know, and what you know, really makes us unique.
And that part of Miami South Beach is all low rise. It's all very different. It is that lovely, typical 3-4 story Art Deco pastel colors facing onto a gorgeous beach. And quite a few of the older hotels were built in that style. Like, first hotel I stayed in down there when I was working was the Fontainebleau. And you drive in and you're like, oh my God. I was like mid-20s. I was like, blown away, because it was just, but there was tons of other properties along the coast there at the time, the older properties that still had that Art Deco vibe going on.
Yeah. And they still do, because they're all protected. So there's, you know, coming down from Fontainebleau, there's the Cadillacs, a beautiful property.
Yeah.
The Andaz, which used to be the Confidant, is also a beautiful hotel. But all the way down to, you know, when you're in the very tip of South Beach with the Hilton Bentley.
Yeah.
Another beautiful Art Deco property. So.
Oh, it's very different.
And the Betsy. The Betsy's a gorgeous property.
The Betsy, which is actually interesting because it looks like a colonial architecture hotel, it stands out from the rest of the more nautical theme.
Yeah.
But when you walk inside, I mean, it's just like a completely different feeling. It's a beautiful, beautiful property. Yeah. And they really embrace art.
Yeah.
Which is another aspect of the destination that we've embraced a lot of art, and that is reflected in that hotel particularly.
Right. And then just across from South Beach, heading back towards the airport, but not going to the airport, you've Brickell and all the development in that area, which is the downtown area part of Miami. I was there last year when we were sailing out of Miami on a cruise, and I was really impressed with Brickell. Like, it was just easy to get around. It was really safe. You're right on the waterfront. You're in your hotel or you're near the hotel and you're pretty much looking across to the cruise port.
Yes.
And yet you're everywhere. Cool. So it's almost this perfect combination of, you've just come in from the airport, you've a great base, cruise terminal here, South Beach there, like Wynwood Walls and Little Havana just up the way from you, the Metro Mover, everything, just making it really accessible and easy to navigate. You know, really nice location.
Yeah. And you mentioned there cruise holidays in Miami.
So. Well, cruise for us in Click and Go Holidays is really big. And it is a key driver for us of getting visitors to Miami to stay in Miami. And what we're really keen to do is that our guests who are going out on cruises from Miami don't just stay for one night, stay for two or three or four, or else do two beforehand and do two afterwards. Because you're there and there is literally so much to see. Like the museum setup, as you were saying, Dan, is just incredible. The PAM, the Frost Science Museum, the Vizcaya Gardens, the museum. Like, there's real culture and difference in Miami.
Yeah.
And I think, we can get people just to go to Miami for Miami, and lots of people do, and lots of people used to just do that. But now people, when they're traveling across the Atlantic, are more likely to be doing two or three center. They're more likely to be doing somewhere else in Florida, and we can combine your time in Orlando with some time in Florida, in Miami, because we can connect it with the Brightline, and then you can add in the cruise. So it opens up all of the possibilities.
That's great.
And the direct Aer Lingus, obviously, is a real plus in terms of the winter. Okay, it's a winter-only service, kind of from October through to April, but it just is a joy.
And one of the things that's great to explore is all of our events, whether it's, you know, an art and culture event or a physical or a sport event. You could actually do that before the cruise.
Yeah.
How wonderful would it be to do the Miami Marathon on a Sunday morning and then in the evening sail out of Miami?
Oh, wow.
And it's one of the most beautiful courses as well. So it's not just the race, but it's known for being very picturesque. It takes you from downtown across to Miami Beach.
Okay.
Up Ocean Drive. I mean, it's incredibly beautiful. beautiful. And wow. then all the way back down to the mainland and to Coconut Grove and back to downtown.
Yeah. So even the names, Joe.
Yeah.
Like, where do you get like Coconut Grove and South Beach
yeah.
and Ocean Drive? Like, you can I can just hear the music playing, yeah. you know, that song. I can just, you know, you can get it in yeah. terms of, but that's how different it is. You know, like, I can't begin to explain how different it is and how relatable it is, because you have all of these names and these places that you're kind of going, wow, yeah, yeah, I've heard of that and I've seen that and I've seen that on TV and I've seen something else. But I think the events piece is really down to that this is a very lived in city, and that, you know, like, it's totally alive both to tourists and to the locals. And that means that the tourists are going to have a great time, because it's yeah. not just a tourist destination.
Place. Yeah. And what would you say surprises first time visitors the most once they arrive in Miami?
Well, I think it's what you mentioned, Paul. It's our international atmosphere that we have. We're very, very diverse. I mean, there's primarily it's like you were mentioning, you come to Miami and while you are in the States, you feel like you're elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you feel like you're in Latin America, you feel like you're in the Caribbean. You know, we have a lot of Europeans that live there and people from all other parts of the world, but primarily the cultures, the two main cultures are the Latin culture and the Caribbean culture. So again, you were mentioning, you know, so there's music everywhere you go to, everywhere. There's always music. There's great food, typical food from each of these countries, whether it's Mexico, Peruvian food, you name it. And it's like you have all these different flavors in what I mean by that, not just food flavors, but just in the culture and everything else that goes with it. Of course, there's, you know, the beaches. We talk about the beaches.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it is an important part of our destination, but because so many people, I think, tend to migrate immediately there, you know, we talk about it, but we like to talk about other things, other areas as well, because, you know, we want to get people out of their comfort zone a little bit and have them experience more of what the destination is like. And, of course, the tropical climate of Miami, you know, now it's rather warm and humid, yeah. but you come in the winter months, and it's glorious weather. It's just spectacular. Very little rain. The sun's always out. And it's just no clouds in the sky usually. And then just the luxury part of the destination. You know, it's just things have changed so much. You were mentioning Brickell.
Yeah.
Even though that's our financial district, it doesn't feel like a typical financial district.
No.
You have families there. You have young professionals. That's the demographics of Brickell, is young professionals that live, work, and play in the Brickell area. And then just the energy, the nonstop energy, whether it's the restaurants, the entertainment. And it's just that's the vibrancy of what Miami is, of Greater Miami and Miami Beach and what we are.
Great. Yeah, like it's year-round gorgeous weather. Yeah. Definitely more pleasant in the wintertime.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's hot and humid in the summertime, but like it's still great climate. Like we never complain about heat.
No.
Well, we do, but like we shouldn't. But wintertime, it's just amazing. Like it is just that perfect climate.
Another interesting surprise about Miami, I think, is that, you know, to talk about what Joe was saying in the diversity of people, is that nearly 60% of those of us that call Miami home were born outside the United States.
Okay.
Wow. So, I mean, it's a really incredibly diverse place, you know, and then layer onto that all the domestic people that move down. We have a lot of people, including myself, that moved down from New York City. We call Miami the sixth borough because it's so connected to the Northeast and to New York.
Okay.
So there's all that influence that I think is what really, you know, manifests itself or shows itself in our food and in our events and in our cultures, you know.
But that's a huge testimony to a particular destination, be it a city or for tourists, that 60% of people who are now living there have moved there from somewhere else.
Exactly.
So they're kind of going, vote of confidence. We like Miami. We want to live here. And you can understand, like, if you land in Miami from anywhere else, you know, you're jealous. You're instantly jealous. You're kind of going like, this is nice.
I want to live here.
Well, and also you can feel like I traveled to the U.S., but when you step off the aircraft, Spanish is the first thing you hear. Yeah. It's like, where did I land? Did I land am I still in the U.S. or did I land in the U.S. or where did the airline take me? Because it's typical, you know, Spanish is the language, the primary language that you hear in the destination. So,
I do remember that from the first time I landed in Miami and we were in one of the terminals that needed the kind of monorail or the whatever it is.
Yeah.
And like, the first language that came on was Spanish welcome. You know, it was the Spanish equivalent of welcome to Miami and the beaches.
Wow.
And it was just brilliant. Yeah. But I think there is a sense of it being holidays, it being kind of relaxed and a nice atmosphere and a nice vibe. It's a city, but it's not a city in terms of how cities can feel. So you have that really nice place to spend some time. So yeah, it should be on people's lists.
Definitely. And the projects like the Underline and the Reefline are changing the way people experience the city. Can you tell us a little bit more about those two attractions?
Sure. You know, that's a great attraction. And we had the pleasure of hosting a tour recently to the Reefline.
Okay.
And it was either to snorkel, because it's not very deep. So that's one of the advantages. It's really accessible to everyone. Or you can, you know, scuba dive and actually go down and interact with, you know, with this marine
Where
life.
Exactly is it? Done.
You can literally swim from South Beach.
Okay.
You know, about, you know, a football field out, you know, 100 meters.
Okay, it's that close.
It's very, very close, yeah. And there's two installations so far, I believe. But the plan is it will run almost 11 kilometers all the way up South Beach or the beach. So it will continue to evolve and grow. And of course, as these reefs mature, it will attract a lot more sea life, you know, marine life and you know, sea life and fish. You know, it's going to be wonderful to actually go out and look at that. So
what a great idea.
Awesome.
What a great
facility.
And there are actually sculptures that are being positioned, and they're, you know, they're, you know, and the whole point of it is not to disturb the ecosystem.
Yeah.
So all of these sculptures that are being created are being created with that in mind. And the coral is actually being grown in a local laboratory in Alapata, which is another one of our up and coming. It's next to Wynnewood and it's up and coming. So it's being grown in a laboratory, and then it'll be taken from there when the time is right, when the weather is perfect. And then it'll be, they'll be placed in these sculptures. So it's not like coral is being taken from one area and then brought and placed in the sculpture. So yeah, it's all done with a lot of sustainability and a lot of, you know, in mind, because we're already starting to see the first sculptures were lowered in November, and almost immediately there's already, you know, marine life that you see around.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really great. Really it's great cool. to see those sort of sustainability projects in place and how they're developing. And MSC have done something very similar out with their island Ocean Cay in the Bahamas in terms of regenerating what was pretty much a devastated island. So like to be doing that proactively with the reefs is just really, really good.
Yeah. And it makes all the difference with the sea life.
Yeah.
And on the other side, the Underline is also a great project.
Yeah.
You know, it started around right before the pandemic, and that brought, you know, park spaces to the Brickell area.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's being rolled out little by little, you know, and what's great about that space is that they activate it where there is poetry reading. So there's a lot of activity that happens within there. And it's quite beautiful. It was, you know, designed by the same architects or the same planners from the New York City High Line.
I was going to say, it just sounds like a total flip of the High Line in New York.
Yeah.
Except this is underneath, like the elevated metro line runs like kind of two stories nearly above ground.
Sounds about
and
right.
The Underline goes underneath this in a linear park.
Okay.
So hence the Underline.
Yeah.
So you're under the line. And then the High Line in New York is what is the park that has been built onto the unused train tracks that runs at about the same height in New York.
Wow, that's really cool.
So I was really curious when I heard that. That's so interesting to know that the same people were involved.
Yeah.
Is that now nearly the number one attraction in New York, the High Line, I think, in terms of the number of visitors that
I believe so. I mean, of course, there's the Statue of Liberty will always be up there. She's not going to go.
No. But, I know, but just lovely to have a walk like that you can experience and enjoy, because like so much of the time we're spending our time when we're in cities, either in, you know, public transport or in Uber or taxis or in underground or something. But to do it at street level or above street level is just gorgeous. So that's what the Underline is. I was curious. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Great idea.
Yeah, it's great. And the Miami food scene, I know you've mentioned it there, is getting serious international recognition. What does the dining in Miami say today about the city's diverse culture?
Wow. That's it in a nutshell, is the diversity of the destination, the different cultures, whether it's from Latin America, Europeans, Caribbean flavor, you name it. And then we currently have 14 Michelin star restaurants in destination. So again, it's just, and it started to grow. And I think it really took off right during the pandemic, because while many cities in the U.S. were closed, Florida as a state and Miami as a city, which we're here to talk about Miami, we were open. And so many people had plans to open restaurants in some of these cities that were locked down. And they're like, you know what? Let's try South Beach. Let's try Miami.
Yeah.
And so they came down. And that's, it sort of got the ball rolling. And then, eventually Michelin, started the Michelin program in the state of Florida. And Miami has always consistently maintained the top number of Michelin star restaurants in the entire state of Florida. And for the longest time, we had the only 2-star in the entire state of Florida.
Wow.
And so, yeah, and it continues. And there's more restaurants in our building. We just have the Cactus Club, which is a Canadian, brand that just opened a few months back. In Brickell Key, we have a new Mexican restaurant called The Mexican, which is upscale Mexican food. They only have 2 in the U.S. One is in Dallas, and then they opened their second store in Miami. So there's a lot of restaurants that are either first time opening up in their doors in Miami, and then from there they go elsewhere, or we're usually like their second or third store. So it continues to evolve on a daily basis.
That's great.
And Jill, like, what surprised me when I was in Brickell, because like there's a lot of chatter about the cost of holidays in the States and the cost of living in the States and the price of things in the States, but what surprised me, and I was only there April 25 in Brickell, going out on that MSC World America ship. And it was really affordable. Like, I had got to the hotel, had a snooze, and then went out on my own before we were meeting the group the next day. It was really, it was not expensive. It was Dublin prices. You know, I just wanted pizza and a beer and something casual. But it was, no matter where I went, it was quite affordable in terms of the price point. And I guess that's down to the fact that it's a lived-in city and it's real people living there. You know, and the prices, whilst you can go up to the Michelin, you can also keep the affordability message, which I think is really important.
But some of the Michelin Bib Gourmands are also very affordable.
Really?
So, you know, you have your Michelin star restaurants, but you also have the Bib Gourmands that really zooms into a more of a neighborhood feel and more of a local feel. And I think those are great gems to look at. And of course, we also have a program, it's our most popular program, called Miami Spice Restaurant Months.
Okay.
That highlights nearly, you know, how many restaurants now?
We're up to about 350. We'll have about 350 restaurants this year.
Many of them are part of that list for Michelin. So it gives locals the opportunity to experience the restaurants, you know, a 3-course dinner or lunch at, you know, much more affordable rates. Yeah. So that's a great time to go in the summer. So
brilliant.
Yeah. So just to give you an idea of the savings, it's actually for Miami Spice Months, the dinner menu starts at $60 per person, and some restaurants offer an enhanced menu, and that's $85. So, and as Dan mentioned, in this program, it also includes, the offer includes Michelin star restaurant as well as the Bib Gourmands. So how many places in the world can you go out to a Michelin star restaurant for dinner and pay just $60 per person?
Nowhere.
I'd like to know.
Nowhere. Yeah.
So you can do that in Miami and during the months of August and September for 2 months.
That's great.
Yeah. So it's another way to come in, enjoy the destination, and where it's not going to hit your pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the food piece, I think, is now just such a part of tourism everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the foodies love all of that.
So good to have that for them.
Great. And many holidaymakers know Miami for the beaches, but what other outdoor adventures would you recommend for people? I know you mentioned the
So we've
the
done
gators.
The Everglades, and we've done the reef line. What other outdoor fun things?
One of the things that comes to mind is something that I discovered recently is in the north part of the city near Aventura, there's Olita River. And they have some great kayaking excursions and snorkeling excursions. And you really feel, we actually had a team building there a couple of years back, you feel like you're very far away, but you're literally in the middle of the city. Wow. And that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So you're able to escape without really going
kayaking in Miami.
Yes.
That would be cool.
I wouldn't have thought that was possible.
And of course, the same thing happens in Key Biscayne.
Yeah.
So that's, there are some beautiful beaches over there, and they have guided excursions. They have kayaks that are clear, so you're able to appreciate the marine life as well.
Yeah. That's really cool.
And to add to that, you have the Fairchild Tropical Gardens down south as well, which is a 80-plus acre area. These beautiful gardens. They have, as a matter of fact, this past weekend, they had the Mango Festival. So it's just incredible. And then you can go paddleboarding in Key Biscayne or in the Biscayne Bay. You can do that as well. And you have the Miami skyline right behind you. And if you want to get really adventurous, you can go cycling in Shark Valley. It has nothing to do with sharks, but it's part of the Everglades. And it's a trail that you can go to and that has no sorts of fences or anything like that. And you can get very up and close to the American alligator.
On a bike,
or you can actually walk. You can walk the trail. And because they're in their natural habitat and you can't feed them or anything like that, this place has been gone forever. It's been open forever and ever. And nothing has ever happened.
Yeah.
But if you want to have that rush of having a American alligator just a couple of feet away from you in their natural habitat, you can go do that and enjoy that. It's great. Or take a airboard tour.
Brilliant.
Very good.
Lots of ideas.
Yeah. In terms of like hidden gems within Miami, what neighborhoods or attractions should we experience?
That's a six marker for each of you.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite hidden gem choice? Neighborhood, attraction, experience?
For me, I would say it's actually the most known neighborhoods and just digging a little bit deeper.
Okay.
Peeling that onion and actually getting into the history of that place.
Okay.
I think there's a lot to discover in Coconut Grove and in South Beach both. So I would stay there, do some walking tours that, talk about our history. There's some, great kind of hidden gems within the main parts of Miami, so you don't have to go very far.
Great. And Joe?
Well, for me, I think I would go with the Vizcaya.
Okay.
The museum and gardens. It's this beautiful European architecture in Coconut Grove, just south of downtown Miami. Beautiful gardens, just incredible. You go inside and it's just spectacular. The art that you see there, and it's just, and it's right on the bay. So you go out in the back and you have these incredible views of Biscayne Bay. And it's in a beautiful setting because it's all very tree-lined streets and a lot of greenery there. And it's just beautiful. So, yeah. And you're not, again, it's just...
You're close.
Five minutes from downtown Miami.
Yeah. Between Miami downtown and Coconut Grove. Yeah. So interesting that you're both picking that kind of location. That's a good tip for everybody. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Great. And Miami has long been known as one of the most LGBTQ+ friendly destinations in the US. What makes the city so welcoming for LGBTQ+ holidaymakers year-round, not just like for Pride?
Well, I think it's our history. We've been welcoming the LGBTQ+ community for, nearly four decades, probably longer now, since the 80s. Mm. A lot of people were moving to South Beach back when it was just a quiet, retirement kind of little village in a way.
Yeah.
And then they were responsible for, in fact, I mentioned earlier about coloring the town and the palette that defined Art Deco. That was Leonard Horowitz, who was part of the community. So really shaping South Beach. So I think that history is really important, not only to attract visitors, but also to keep it alive by telling those stories. So that, like I said, peeling that onion and going deeper into that. Also, the lifeguard stands that are so iconic.
Those
are designed by William Lane Architects. He is part of our community. So it's really the contributions of the community that continue to really elevate us with the visitor.
Bringing it to life.
Yeah. Wow. And add to that, we have 15 annual events. we have our biggest events that happen in the spring, whether it's a Winter Party Festival at the beginning of March. Our biggest event is Miami Beach Pride. It's a beautiful parade, nearly 100 different floats.
Wow.
That happens, you know, beautiful time of year, great weather.
When is that one?
It's in April, second week in April.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, lovely time.
And that's another great on Sunday event that you could enjoy and then go on a cruise afterwards.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to do, and there's a, you know, it's always we as a destination, we always have a participation in the parade. It's a lot of fun.
Just imagine.
Yeah, and but the events go through all through the year, including aligned with some of the bigger events. For instance, Art Week in December, which is our most popular time of the year for visitors, we have a little fair called Art Gazel, which is a takeover of a small hotel that's LGBTQ owned called Hotel Gathering, and it becomes Art Gazel, and every room in that small hotel becomes a gallery for an artist that's part of the community. So it's really ways of engaging. You know, there's LGBTQ run clubs. So, you know, the community is very strong there, and it's really about highlighting the community, elevating the community, and that it keeps inviting people to come and experience.
Brilliant.
So on the parade, just to touch up on the parade, there's always a wait list from our colleagues in the office. So when Dan puts out the communication
to be on the float,
you know, it's like in 5 minutes, it's filled.
Yeah.
So then it's like, okay, wait list. So you're on a wait list. So we love it. We love to go and, you know, and be with Dan and just be part of that festivity. And it's such a great, great time because you're really out there and you just see the faces of the people that are out there in the parade route. And it's just a big celebration.
Yeah.
Always
everybody's
such
having
friendly,
a great time. It really is. You
event.
Know? And I always like to, you know, and I'm very proud of the fact that it's the entire community. So the LGBT, we go out and, you know, and on behalf of Dan and things like we promote LGBTQ travel to Miami. Of course, he's our expert, but I'm always very proud that it's the entire destination, that it's not just one neighborhood or two neighborhoods. It's all of Greater Miami and Miami Beach.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's really
important
great.
In terms of feeling safe
secure
and engaged and involved and more than just accommodation and bars and clubs. It's the events and everything else that goes with it.
The businesses, LGBTQ owned businesses, restaurants, you know, shops. So I think that's always a nice thing. You know, the community, when we travel, we like to be represented, right? We like to feel that we're part of there. And so when you walk into a shop and you see your own community, it's always a nice thing.
Yeah, there's lovely that recognition piece.
And it's great that it's not just like a month or an event, like it's throughout the whole year, which is
and
fantastic.
Lovely to hear that it's spreading into the likes of Brickell and, you know, covering more of the area.
Yeah,
Wynwood is a great place. I mean, we have a great restaurant there called Our House. You know, in RuPaul's Drag Race, we have three of the drag queens from Our House have been contestants in RuPaul. So the level of drag performance is very elevated. We have people coming from other destinations, like in New York or LA, and they're like, we have never seen a drag scene like we see in Miami. So that's
brilliant.
Really
cool.
A lot of fun.
Some validation.
Yeah. Great. And then lastly, the World Cup is bringing global attention to Miami this year. How will visitors be able to soak up the vibe, even if they don't have tickets?
Oh, my God. That is, it's funny because we just, this past Saturday, we actually had inaugurated our Fan Fest festivities. The main event is taking place in Bayfront Park, right in downtown. But it's not limited to that area. We have throughout the entire destination, there are places that you can go for watch parties and do different things. And what's important to note here is that 100% of our events, 100%, are open to the public and completely free.
Wow.
Last Thursday, we actually, the Thursday before the grand opening, if you will, of the Fan Fest, there was a concert at Loomis Park right on Miami Beach. It was right on the beach, Carlos Vives and a bunch of other artists came in and they did a concert. And again, it was completely free to the
that's
public.
Really
so
cool.
So while you're not at the stadium, you're not enjoying the actual matches and things like that, there are, and by the way, at you know, there's screens in Bayfront Park. There are these giant screens, three or four of them, spread out, so people can go there and have their watch party and all day long. So it's there. It's the hours they're opening in them at noon, and it stays open till midnight. So you have 12 hours.
Brilliant.
That you can enjoy all the festivities of World Cup.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool.
So the atmosphere must be electric.
It must be.
And
like,
it's free. That makes it so accessible.
Yeah.
And the whole experience.
Yeah, we're very excited that Miami is one of the host cities, you know, U.S. host cities. Because there's really a great football culture in Miami.
Because of the cultural diversity and all of the Spanish and Latin American influence.
Yeah.
And those great soccer teams.
Yeah.
And plus Mr. Messi.
Of course.
Well, you know, being part of the local football club. So his arrival just absolutely just shot the interest in that sport through the roof, not only locally, but actually throughout the U.S.
Wow.
Because when he first came in, anywhere that the team went and played, they sold more tickets than they ever had. And they actually had to open up additional areas of some of the stadiums to accommodate the demand.
Wow.
And that's just one man. And so, So his, you know, he really, you know, brought the game to the forefront. So,
Good.
That's amazing. That's great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We've really learned a lot.
That was brilliant. Like, I have learned so much. Having been a few times, it was just great to learn more and more about the new stuff. So thank you very much.
No, definitely. No, Miami's on the list now. Every time we do a podcast, there's something else on the list.
Good. That's the idea.
But thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure.
And if you'd like to follow us on our social media channels, we're on Facebook, Instagram, and we also have a YouTube channel.
And Twitter.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you again for joining us.
Thanks a million, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.